Hello, everybody. This is Dave Weiner here. It's Morning Coffee Notes. And today is, oh God, I knew you were going to ask me that question. Today is April 26th, 2005. And wow, I just got about half an hour into a podcast and I was recording it on the Arcos, my little PDA thing. And, you know, after a few minutes, actually about a minute, the screen goes dark, and I just sort of assumed it was recording all that time. And, well, as it turns out, it wasn't recording at all. So, and I was kind of, well, I don't know, it took me a while to warm up. Today, this, now that I'm going to, like, redo the whole thing, it won't take me as long to warm up. So, that's the benefit. You're going to get the same ideas that much more quickly, and, well, it took me a little bit longer to create the podcast than I would like to have had it take. Anyway, so today, as I said before, it's the 26th. It's the evening. It's about 8:30 p.m. and it's raining outside. It's kind of a little bit chilly day today. It was basically my first day with any programming after my trip to Seattle. And so I spent the day working on a kind of a light warm-up project, and that was the PDA version of Scripting News. That's at pda.scripting.com. And like almost everything that I'm doing these days, it's built around OPML. This is my new sort of direction. I want to do some development with and around OPML. I'm working on a... Oh, there goes the cell phone. All right. Well, that's what the cell phone sounds like. Anyway, I'm doing most of my development around OPML these days. That's because, with any luck, I'm going to have the OPML editor out. You know, I mean, God, I've been predicting that that was imminent ever since the beginning of the year. I just don't get the same kind of head of steam as easily as I used to years ago. That's really what's going on. It takes me a little bit longer to get going, and then, you know, the distractions come along, and I kind of let them come along, and I think that's because I don't smoke cigarettes and because I don't do a lot of caffeine, and you know, I'm older, and I'm more easily distracted, which I'm kind of letting myself do that. I like that about myself these days. And damn it, if that's what I want to do, that's what I'm going to do. So, but I'm now quite deliberately going towards building up a head of steam. I really want to get this outliner thing out there in people's hands. And I've got three apps that I'm going to work on in sequence. I'm not going to get them all out ready to go before I ship. Although in each case, they're at least the third time I've implemented the idea. So, as we all know, third time's the charm, and sometimes it takes four, and that, luckily we're going to be doing that in one of these. I don't want to say what all the apps are, because I want to leave a little element of surprise in there, and I sort of want to, and then sort of, you know, pace myself a little bit. And then the fourth app is going to be encouraging other people to do apps, and around my outliner, of course, is highly programmable. It's got APIs up the yin yang. It's just very programmable sort of thing, and it's a very nice platform for building applications that are good for people who have ideas. And it's kind of what I wanted to talk about today is the difference between idea processing and other kinds of processing, and because it is a different kind of application of a personal computer. They've been around for a while. I've been pretty much working on them my entire career, but you know, it was so hard to get people to believe that, you know, certain people, other people, like the people who used ThinkTank and Ready and more, many of them in the 80s were products that I created in the 1980s. Many of the people that used them were real, total, true believers, you know, in the idea processing idea. And, but in general, the technology industry has focused on a whole different kind of application. And my sense is that it may be time, for the entire tech industry to refocus, because it's been sort of like the productivity apps, or another way of saying production apps, which I'm going to explain what those are and what makes them different, have kind of run their course. And it may be that there isn't a whole lot more to do there. Certainly not the great growth opportunities that were there in, you know, in previous decades. You know, people are going to continue to need the tools, the production tools that the word processors and the databases and the page layout programs and even blogging tools, for that matter, are production applications. But then there's a whole other side of using a personal computer for what we called idea processing. And so first, before I say what idea processing is, before I try to say what it is, because it's hard to do, hard to explain, let me explain what it isn't, and that's actually a lot easier. So the production apps are things that are programs, software, that take the place of processes that used to be done without software. So, for example, a database was used to take the place of filing cabinets. You know, before computers, there used to be offices or businesses ran off of information that was stored on paper, and then the paper was put into folders, and the folders were put into file cabinets. And companies would maintain just huge, huge, physically huge plants, you know, spaces with employees whose sole job was to simply store and retrieve information that was stored in this sort of filing system approach to storing data. It's hard to imagine. I mean, if you were raised after a certain point, let's say if you were born in the 1970s or 80s, really there wasn't very much of that going on. Certainly not a whole lot of new stuff. And today, our economy is almost entirely computerized. There's really very little that is still stored on paper. So much so that, for example, we're now at the stage where people in their homes are paying their bills electronically, and there's no paper actually being created. In a way, you think about it, it's pretty arcane. It's kind of crazy to, you know, store information so that it can only be read visually by a human being. Doesn't even seem all that logical, but that's the way it used to be. And so databases, IBM made a huge business out of selling machines and software to store those. Those were mainframe computers, and then personal computers had DBase, and on the Macintosh there was FileMaker, and DBase begat FoxBase, which then was bought by Microsoft. Microsoft also created Access. Oracle, of course, is a huge database company, and they have competitors, and those are database companies as well. Another example would be word processing. Word processing took the place of typewriters. You know, people would use typewriters to create documents, to create novels, to type records that then would go into the filing systems, the filing cabinets. And then, of course, there was handwriting as well. People would fill in forms. But word processors took the place of typewriters. And then, of course, followed by laser printers and then the web, which got rid of paper printing. I mean, for a while it was thought that the whole point of using a word processor was to produce more paper. And there was this whole concept of the paperless office, and Xerox was promoting this, and there were articles and cover stories in Business Week that asked, will we ever really get rid of paper? And, you know, we still haven't gotten rid of paper. But it's not really considered all that controversial these days. I think that most people believe that eventually we will get rid of paper. And, I mean, it'd still be nice to sort of, I like to take notes. Sometimes it's the most effective way for me to take a note is to just jot it down on a piece of paper. But I think that's an anachronism. I think I feel that way because I was born in the 20th century And as the 21st century gets older and people like you and I who were born in the 20th century become the people who tell stories about what life used to be like in the 20th century, and then new generations come along and they won't feel the same affection that we feel about paper, and they'll be perfectly happy to live lives without generating any paper at all. Maybe they'll even feel happy not having to use gasoline. That would be something, you know, to look forward to as well. So production apps or productivity apps, that's what they were called that too, really did deliver productivity. They really did make life more efficient, and they were very useful and very good things to have. But there were other ways of using computers that were not about doing things that we used to do, but doing them with more productivity. And those were what I call the idea processing apps. And the thought there is that, well, a whiteboard, for example, is an attempt or is a way of doing some visualization. And you go to a whiteboard and you sort of use the whiteboard to organize your ideas. Or you take out a notebook and you start scribbling in the notebook, or you draw some diagrams and use those diagrams to help you, again, to sort of take your ideas out of your head and try to be able to visualize them and help you to think about them from different angles, different points of view, and perhaps see that they're not quite so complicated, and the thing that you thought was insoluble, because you look at it from a different angle, maybe you see a different way to solve the problem. This whole idea of taking ideas out of your brain and putting them on something that then comes in through your eyes is a very powerful way of ideating, would be, is a word, if it's a word. I guess it is a word. It's sort of like idea processing. It's a way of processing ideas. So I stumbled upon this idea processing thing by trying to create a better program editor. That was how I got into this stuff. A friend of mine, when I was a grad student at the University of Wisconsin, showed me, or told me about actually, the editor that people use to edit Lisp programs. And Lisp is a programming language, and its name is not actually an acronym, but it stands for List Processor. And a Lisp program is actually a list, and a list is a hierarchical thing. A list can contain other lists. And my friend told me about this idea that they had an editor that understood this basic structure, this recursive nature of Lisp programs. And they had a feature called elision, which allowed you to say, I don't want to look at the detail here. I don't want to see any of the lists below a certain level. And so then you could sort of see the forest and not see the trees. And I thought, wow, that's really interesting. And I noticed the same thing was true about the programming language that I was working in at the time, which was Pascal. And I saw that basically, while it wasn't quite as consistent a hierarchical language, in the sense that Lisp only had one way to go in and out levels, that was through parentheses. Pascal had a little bit more cumbersome way of doing it, but still was, you know, a statement could contain a list of statements, each of which in turn could contain a list of statements, and that's basically how you build programs. Programs were, all programs basically at the at the top level, we're just one statement, and basically a call to a procedure, and then that procedure could have a statement list, and each of those statements could be a compound statement. Each one could be a simple statement that wasn't compound. So this idea of recursion is something that keeps coming up in computers, and recursion comes up at the very beginning, where we define the languages that we use to create software. They're recursive. the data structures that we use inside those programming languages, they're also recursive. They're hierarchical list structures that can contain other lists. People say, well, you know, hierarchy is too rigid. Well, it turns out the hierarchy actually isn't really all that rigid, because you can have this idea of an include, what I call inclusion. Other people use different terms. They call them transclusion. That's what Ted Nelson calls them. In programming languages, inclusion is a procedure call. You call a procedure, you basically jump to that procedure and use every bit of its capabilities, and then when you're done, you come back to where you called it from, and you can do that as many different places as you want. So really, hierarchies can very easily be used to model networks, and in fact, it's probably the most natural way to do this, because nobody's really ever come up with an editor, at least not one that I've ever seen, that was really good at editing networks. Yet, we have great editors for editing hierarchies. We have an infinite number of editors. Basically, every editor is a hierarchy editor. The question is, though, if these hierarchies are appearing everywhere, which they are, well, why not formalize this and create one editor that is really good at dealing with all of these hierarchies, and no matter where they show up, because they show up everywhere. They show up, like, for example, the file system on your desktop computer. If you use Windows or you use Macintosh or you use Linux, it really doesn't matter. All of our file systems are also these hierarchies, these lists, these sort of recursive structures that then can be turned into networks. In a file system on the Macintosh, they call the escapes, they call them aliases. You know, I can basically put a link to a folder anywhere I want to, and then it's as if that folder actually were right there. In Windows, they're called shortcuts. I forget what they're called in Unix, but Unix has them as well. Now, these shortcuts, these or aliases or hyper jumps or links in the web is what they're called. They're called links. Oh, by the way, there are a lot, many other places in our computers where we have these sorts of structures. We have them, for example, PowerPoint. PowerPoint, a sequence of slides, is a list. And is it hierarchic? Yeah, of course it is. Because why? Because any given slide can contain any number of bullet points. And since people now use outliners, by the way, I created a program called More in the 1980s that started right at the very beginning with the idea that a slideshow was simply a outline, an arbitrarily deep outline where each of the top level headlines was a slide, and then within the slide you could have any amount of structure that you wanted. PowerPoint caught up with that a number of years later. And while they don't have quite as general a structure, outline or list or whatever you want to call them became a very popular way to do those there as well, in PowerPoint as well. In any case, so what I was working on, now I worked on just a straight outliner, just something. It wasn't about producing anything. It wasn't about filing data. It wasn't about typing something. It wasn't about doing something that we used to do before better than we did it before because we were using a computer. I mean, if you wanted to compare it to something, and of course, the reporters of the day in the 80s, because all they knew was production applications, productivity apps, inevitably tried to analyze it that way. And it really came up flat. I mean, basically, the intro to almost every review. And by the way, we got a lot of press for these because the reporters generally, many of them liked it. Although I don't think very many of them understood why they liked it. So they would say, you remember when, you know, you had to outline stuff when you were in school and how you felt guilty because you always did the outline after you wrote the paper because... Well, because it was such a pain in the butt to do the outline. In other words, the whole idea of arranging your thoughts and playing around with them was so bad, so awkward on paper, that it was completely impossible to do what the teacher was asking you to do. The teacher knew in some level that it would be really good for the students to play around with the organization of the paper that you had to write before you actually wrote it. But, the best you could do would be to use index cards and try it that way. But it was really awkward because you couldn't see all of the items at once. And so you arranged them on a wall. I did that for some projects that I did, or used a whiteboard, but then you'd have to erase and retype. It was kind of like using a typewriter, except if it's about brainstorming and creativity, well, it's kind of antithetical to. So being creative and being process oriented are sort of. They sort of work against each other, although there are processes to creativity, and creativity can be, you can use structures to help in to support creativity. That's something maybe I can talk about at a later time. But the key thing about the computer and ideas was or is that you could control the level of detail that you're looking at. It was like the elision function that Lisp editors had in the in the 70s, I think in the 60s even. And then the ability to reorganize according to structure. So I could say, okay, I want to move this thing to the front of the list. I want to take this thing, move it to the end. I want to take this idea and move it subordinate to this one. And I want to take that whole structure and move it out to the top level. That this idea that the text, I used to think of it as the text was on rails, so that it was designed, by design, it was very, very easy to move things around. The whole point of entering your thinking, your thoughts into an outline is, well, one of them is that you can reorganize them. My dad likes to say, and I don't know if I mentioned it, I know I mentioned it in one of the two podcasts I did, but we did a talk where he talked about outlining, in March. It was a podcast. If you go to morningcoffeenuts.com, you should find it in the list there. Is that it was only useful if you had more than two ideas, or more than one idea, sorry. Which of course is kind of a cute way of saying that, if you're even slightly creative, how do you harness all of your creativity? Well, you just say, okay, I'm just going to get this down, get it into the outline, and then, worry about later in terms of how I want to use that and where it fits in. That's something that I can deal with later. So if you had a complex problem, what are the kinds of problems that, count? You're going to court, you're a lawyer, and you're going to try a case, and there's all this evidence, and you want to pull it all together into a strategy. You also want to take some notes on what you think the opposition is going to be using as evidence and what their approach is going to be. You want to take down all this information, and then in the end, you'll judge success or failure based on whether or not you win or lose the case. Another one would be a business plan. You have to consider all kinds of factors that determine whether or not your business will be successful. And as you're managing the businesses, project planning, project management really didn't yield itself very well to the whole sort of production application philosophy. And in the end, project management tools did eventually evolve to mostly becoming outliners or idea processors. You're managing a baseball team or trying to come up with a name for a new product, designing a piece of software, designing the user interface of a piece of software, trying to figure out how to organize a code base. You're planning a garden or a party. Anywhere where the quality of your planning determines success or failure is a good place to think about using idea processing software. So it's different. It's different. And so why OPML? To bring it all the way real pragmatic. Okay, I mean, this is what I'm working on right now. Well, I guess maybe why RSS and what makes RSS so cool, you know? And RSS isn't really like these applications. RSS is like news. You know, it's good for conveying temporal information, information that where, you know, you want to be, each item is a sort of a standalone thing. And when a new item appears, that's something that you want to know about. That's when RSS is the appropriate thing to use. Outlining and OPML lists, these are all kind of different kinds of applications from RSS. They are related, though. And OPML is used very often in conjunction with RSS to convey a list of subscriptions. And it can even convey a hierarchical list of subscriptions. But it could do a lot more than that, too. And so that's where I'm going. And that's what I'm spending my time thinking about these days. I'm thinking about idea processing. I'm thinking about tools for idea processing. I'm thinking about networks, networking, and idea processing. Because since the last time we really looked at idea processing, we now have a global network that really works. And back when last time I was working on this stuff, we didn't. We were just at the very beginning of having a global network. So that's all I wanted to talk about today. I would like to also have a discussion about this. So if you get this and you hear this podcast, and you're interested in idea processing, or you're one of the people who was doing it, or in the 1980s and 90s perhaps, and maybe you're even still doing it today, you know, post something somewhere and send me a link to that. Or if you don't have a place to post it, send me an email and just tell me what you're doing and what your thoughts are about this. You can send me email at, let's try this address. Dave.Weiner@gmail.com. That's G is in Google, mail.com. And be sure to let me know if it's okay to, ideally it would be great if you had it on your space, so that way I could just point to it and you could sort of get comments from people and you know, we can sort of watch it, this discussion develop that way. If you want to send it to me, just let me know if it's okay to publish it on my site. And if there's enough, then, you know, maybe we'll take a look at it and see if we can't get some kind of a snapshot in time of what people are doing today and what their hopes are for the future with this stuff, with idea processing. So anyway, that's my shtick for today. That's April 26, 2005. Hope you're all doing great. And if you're in this rainstorm that we're having, you know, try to stay dry. And if you want to follow what I'm doing, go to www.scripting.com. Anyway, everybody have a great day. And see you again real soon. Okay, bye.